And now on BBC World Service, it's time for Play of the Week. Award-winning actor Henry Goodman plays all the parts in an adaptation of a story, part of a trilogy of The Invisible, which has been taking France by storm.
Avec ma gueule de métèque, de juif errant, de pâtre grec, et mes cheveux aux quatre vents.
Monsieur Ibrahim et les fleurs du Coran, by Eric Emmanuel Schmidt, in translation by Stéphane Laporte. Adapted for radio and performed by Henry Goodman.
Avec mes mains de maraudeurs, de musiciens.
When I was 11, I broke into my piggy bank and went whoring. My piggy was made of puke-coloured china with a slot to let coins in, but not out. My father had chosen that one-way piggy bank because it met his idea of life. Money should be kept and not spent. There were 200 francs inside the piggy. 4 months' work. One morning, while I was cleaning up the flat before going to school, my father said...
Please. From now on, you'll write down everything you spend on groceries on the notepad in the kitchen.
In other words, it wasn't enough being yelled at in school and at home. It wasn't enough cleaning up, studying, ironing, cooking, carrying the groceries, or living alone in a dark, loveless flat, being the slave rather than the son of a no-client, no-wife lawyer. I also had to be taken for a thief. As long as I was suspected of stealing, I might as well do it. As I was saying, there were 200 francs inside the piggy. That was the going rate for a girl on the Rue du Paradis. That was the going rate for manhood. The first girls asked me for some ID. In spite of my voice and my weight, they doubted I was 16, as I said I was. At the end of the street, there was a new one. She was as cute and round as a picture. I showed her my money. She smiled.
And you say you're 16? Turned 16 this morning.
We went upstairs. I could hardly believe it. She was 22. She was old, and she was all mine. When it was over, she softly petted my hair and said,
"Maybe you should come back and bring me a gift."
It almost ruined my pleasure. I'd forgotten about the gift. It was done. I was a man. I'd been baptized between a woman's legs. I could hardly stand up, my knees were shaking so. And my troubles had begun. I'd forgotten the famous little gift. I ran back to the flat, I rushed into my bedroom, I looked all around for the most valuable thing I could give her. And then I ran right back to the Rue du Paradis. The girl was on the porch. I gave her my teddy bear.
Avec ma bouche qui a bu, qui a embrassé, mordu, sans jamais assouvir sa faim.
Every day I'd go grocery shopping and I'd cook meals. I'd only buy cans. I didn't buy them on a daily basis so they'd be fresh. I bought them that way because my father only left me a couple of coins in the morning. When I started stealing from my father to punish him for suspecting me, I also started stealing from Monsieur Ibrahim. Monsieur Ibrahim had always been old. As far back as anyone on the Rue Bleue and the Rue du Faubourg Poissonnière could remember. Monsieur Ibrahim had always tended his grocery store, from 8 a.m. till the middle of the night, propped up between his cash register and the cleaning fluids. It was generally considered that Monsieur Ibrahim was a wise man, probably because he'd been the one Arab in a Jewish street for over 40 years. Probably because he smiled a lot and talked little. Probably because he seemed not to give in to the ordinary restlessness of mere mortals and never moved, just like a branch grafted onto his stool. In order to steal money from my father and yet manage to feed us both, I naturally had to steal cans from Monsieur Ibrahim. I was kind of ashamed, but to conquer my shame, just as I was paying, I would think very hard. After all, he's only an Arab. Every day, I'd stare straight into Mr. Ibrahim's eyes and give myself courage. After all, he's only an Arab.
I'm not an Arab, Momo. I'm from the Golden Crescent.
I picked up my groceries, and in a daze, I went out into the street. If he could hear me think, did that mean that he knew I was stealing from him? The next day, I only stole one can, but I asked him,
"What's the Golden Crescent?"
I must say that all night long, I'd imagined Monsieur Ibrahim sitting on the tip of a golden crescent and flying in a starlit sky.
It refers to a part of Turkey and Persia, Momo.
The next day, I added as I got out my purse,
"My name isn't Momo, it's Moise."
The next day, it was his turn to add,
"I know your name is Moses, that's why I call you Momo. It doesn't sound as impressive."
And the next day, I asked,
"What's it to you anyway? Moise is a Jewish name, it's not an Arab name."
"I'm not an Arab, Momo. I'm a Muslim."
And the next day, I asked,
"Why does everybody say you're the street's Arab if you're not an Arab?"
"Arab means open at night and on Sundays in the grocery business."
And such was our conversation. A sentence a day. There was no rush, for him because he was old, for me because I was young. And every other day I'd steal a can. I believe a one-hour conversation would have taken us a year or two if we hadn't happened to meet Brigitte Bardot. The Rue Bleue was in turmoil. A movie was being shot. Everything that had a gender on the Rue Bleue, the Rue Papillon, and the Rue du Faubourg-Poissonnière was all stirred up. Women wanted to check whether she was as gorgeous as they said she was. Men, well, stopped thinking altogether. Their reasoning was stuck in the fly of their pants. Brigitte Bardot was there, in the flesh. I positioned myself at the window. I looked at her, and she reminded me of the Benamuse's kitten. Then I looked closer. I also found that she looked a lot like the whores on the Rue du Paradis. I didn't realize that, in fact, it was the whores on the Rue du Paradis who dressed as Brigitte Bardot in order to entice customers. Finally, I realized, dumbfounded, that Monsieur Ibrahim was standing outside on his doorstep. For the first time, at least since I'd come into existence, he'd left his stool. After I'd watched the little Bardot animal shake itself several times in front of the cameras, I got a little tired of the repetitiveness. Even though I felt strange itches in my limbs, and I started to think of the beautiful blonde who had my teddy bear, I decided to go down to Monsieur Ibrahim's to take advantage of his momentary lapse of attention and steal several cans from him. Disaster. Monsieur Ibrahim was back behind his cash register. And yet his eyes were laughing. I'd never seen him like that.
Monsieur Ibrahim, are you married?
He looked at me, surprised.
Of course I'm married.
Strange. I was convinced all he had in life was his grocery store. Right at that moment, I couldn't have sworn that Monsieur Ibrahim was as old as everybody thought he was.
Imagine you're in a boat with your wife and Brigitte Bardot. Your boat is sinking. What would you do, Monsieur Ibrahim?
I'd bet my wife could swim.
Suddenly, all decks were cleared for action. Monsieur Ibrahim stood at attention. Brigitte Bardot walked into the grocery store.
"Bonjour, monsieur,"
she said with the voice of a kitten that could speak.
"Do you have water?"
"Of course, mademoiselle."
And then the unthinkable occurred. Monsieur Ibrahim got up from his stool, went to get a bottle of water from the shelf, and brought it to her himself.
"Oh, how much is it, monsieur?"
40 francs, mademoiselle."
She gave a start. So did I. Back then, a water bottle cost 2 francs, not 40. Brigitte Bardot pursed her lips.
"I didn't know water was so rare around here."
"It's not water that's rare. It's genuine stuff."
He said it with so much charm that Brigitte Bardot blushed slightly, took out 40 francs, and left.
"You've got some nerve, Monsieur Ibrahim. You sure have."
"Well, I have to get my money back for all the cans you've stolen from me. My little Momo."
And that's the day we became friends. sure, from that moment on, I could have stolen my cans someplace else, but Monsieur Ibrahim made me swear to steal them from him. In the days that followed, Monsieur Ibrahim gave me a bunch of tips on how to squeeze money from my father without him realizing it. Serve him stale bread after baking it a little in the oven. Replace his chopped liver with dog food. Mix his usual Beaujolais with cheap 3-franc wine and the killer, the really great idea, pee in the green chartreuse my father used to drink after every meal. Thanks to Monsieur Ibrahim's intervention, the adult world cracked open. I'd saved up 200 francs again. I could once more prove to myself that I was a man. Monsieur Ibrahim and the horse were making my life with my father even more difficult. I'd started doing something both awful and dizzying. Comparisons. It was as cold as ever when I was next to my father. With Monsieur Ibrahim and the horse, it was warmer, clearer. I watched my father read in his armchair, lit by the halo from the lamp that hovered like a yellow conscience over his pages. He didn't pay any more attention to me than he would have to a dog. If I made any noise, he would twitch as though I were a mosquito. If I hummed, he sighed heavily.
Moise, be quiet.
Sorry.
I'm reading. Oh, thank goodness your brother Popol wasn't like you.
Popol was my inadequacy's other name. My father kept throwing my older brother Popol's memory in my face whenever I did something wrong. Popol studied very hard. Popol liked maths. Popol never left the bathtub dirty. Popol brought his daddy his chartreuse. Popol was very fond of the books his daddy liked. All things considered, it was just as well my mother had left with Popol shortly after I was born, because it was hard enough to struggle with a memory. Living next to Popol, perfection incarnate, would have been too much for me.
Dad, do you think Popol would have liked me?
My father stared at me.
What kind of question is that?
I'd learned to look at people through my father's eyes. In other words, I despised and looked down on everybody in the street. Talking with the Arab grocer, even though he was not an Arab.
Arab means open at night and on Sundays, in the grocery business.
Doing whores a favor. Those were things I put away in a secret drawer in my mind. They weren't officially part of my life.
Why don't you ever smile, Momo?
The question was a real kick in the stomach. A low blow. I wasn't prepared.
Smiley's for rich people, Monsieur Ibrahim. I can't afford it.
He started smiling.
Then you think I'm rich?
Well, you've always got banknotes in the cash register.
But I use those banknotes to pay for the stock in the store. At the end of the month, there's hardly anything left, you know?
And he smiled even more, as though to taunt me.
Monsieur Ibrahim, when I say that smiling is for rich people, I mean it's for happy people.
You get happy by smiling, not the other way around.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Try it.
Yeah, right.
Try smiling. You'll see.
After all, considering Monsieur Ibrahim had asked nicely, and considering he'd surreptitiously given me a can of superior 3-sausage sauerkraut for the price of one that tasted like a mop, why not try it? The next day, I had a smile for everybody. I couldn't believe it. It worked.
No, ma'am. I didn't understand the maths problem.
Wham, bam, smile.
Well, Moise, I'll explain it to you.
Unbelievable. No yelling, no telling off. At lunch, I asked for some more vanilla custard. Wham, bam, smile. And I got it. During gym class, I admitted my sneakers stank. Wham, bam, smile. The teacher laughed and patted me on the shoulder. It was exhilarating. Nothing resisted me anymore. Monsieur Ibrahim had given me the absolute weapon. I bombarded the whole world with my smile. On my way back from school, I went over to the Rue du Paradis. I asked the prettiest whore there, a tall black girl, who'd always refused me. Can we go upstairs?
Are you 16?
Of course I'm 16. It's been a while now. Wham, bam. smile. We went upstairs. And afterwards, as I was putting my clothes back on, I told her how I was a reporter, how I was writing an important book about hookers, and how I needed her to tell me her life story, if she was willing. Wham, bam, smile.
Are you sure you're a reporter?
Wham, bam, smile. She spoke. I hardly dared believe it. A woman was talking to me. To me. That night, when my father got home, I stood in front of him in the light to make sure he'd see me.
Dinner's ready.
Wham, bam, smile. He looked at me in amazement. I smiled on. It was the end of the day, it was tiring, but I kept going. Wham, bam, smile.
You look like you did something stupid.
The smile vanished. I lowered my eyes. But I didn't lose hope. Later, in the kitchen, I smiled again while serving him. He looked at me worried, and I dropped my smile. Dessert came. I tried again.
Come here.
I knew it. My smile was winning him over. I got closer. Maybe he wanted to give me a kiss. Once, he told me that Popol liked to kiss him. He was very affectionate. Maybe Popol had known this kiss thing at birth, or maybe my mother had had enough time to teach him. I got closer, right next to his shoulder. I smiled so much, my mouth was almost ripped in two.
You're going to have to wear braces.
That evening, I started visiting Monsieur Ibrahim at night, once my father was in bed.
It's all my fault. If I was just like Popol, my father wouldn't have had such a hard time loving me.
How do you know? Popol's gone.
So?
So maybe he couldn't stand your father.
You think so?
He left. That's a proof if ever I saw one.
Monsieur Ibrahim, you knew Popol, didn't you?
Monsieur Ibrahim gave no answer.
Monsieur Ibrahim, what did you think of Popol?
Monsieur Ibrahim heaved a sigh, looked at the ceiling, and then slammed his cash register, as though to prevent it from speaking.
Momo, let me tell you something. I like you more than Popol 100 times, 1,000 times more.
You do?
I was pretty happy, but I didn't want to let on. He was attacking my brother Popol. I had to stand up for my family.
Hey, watch out. I won't let you badmouth my brother. What did you have against Popol?
Monsieur Ibrahim saw danger coming and got careful.
Popol was a good boy, but you'll have to forgive me. I like Momo better.
I was decent. I forgave him. 1 week later, the dentist on the Rue Papillon examined me and sent my father an estimate for straightening my teeth. It was so prohibitive, my father threw it in the bin.
Don't smile as much, that'll do.
That evening, relieved, I went to see Monsieur Ibrahim and told him.
I know, my little Momo. The dentist is a friend of mine. He promised me to put your father off. And above all, he confirmed that your teeth did not require braces.
Well, Monsieur Ibrahim certainly had some pull.
Can you picture yourself on the Rue du Paradis with braces in your teeth? Which one would believe you're 16 then?
Monsieur Ibrahim had scored quite a goal there.
Monsieur Ibrahim, how do you know all that?
I don't know anything. I only know what's in my Quran. Momo, going to see professional girls is fine. The first couple of times. It's better to see professionals, people who know their trade. Afterwards, when you start making it complicated, when you start putting your feelings into it, amateurs can do just fine.
I felt relieved.
Do you sometimes go to the Rue du Paradis?
He stared at the ceiling and let out a sigh.
Paradise is for everyone.
Oh, Monsieur Ibrahim. Don't tell me you still go there at your age.
That was the only time in his life Monsieur Ibrahim shot me a withering look.
Why? Is it only for underage kids?
On Mondays, Monsieur Ibrahim always locked up his store. One Sunday night, I was on vacation, so he asked me,
Momo, how would you like to go for a walk with me?
Do you walk, Monsieur Ibrahim?
There, I put my foot in my mouth again. So I concealed it with a great big smile.
I mean, I've only seen you up on that stool.
All the same, I was damn happy. The following day, Monsieur Ibrahim took me to Paris. The Paris that's pretty, the one in the pictures, the Paris of tourists.
Look, Momo, the Seine River loves bridges, just like a woman loves bracelets.
Then we walked through the gardens on the Champs-Élysées, between the theatres and the puppet show. Then on the Rue Faubourg Saint-Honoré, where there were plenty of stores with fancy brand names. It was weird. All those huge empty stores, compared to Monsieur Ibrahim's packed grocery store.
Monsieur Ibrahim, it's amazing how rich people's windows are poorer. There's nothing in them.
That's luxury, Mom. Nothing in the window, nothing in the store. Everything in the price.
We ended up in the secret gardens of the Palais Royal, and there, Monsieur Ibrahim treated me to a lemonade as he regained his legendary immobile status on a bar stool, slowly sipping his aperitif.
Must be nice living in Paris.
You do live in Paris, Momo.
No, I don't. I live on the Rue Bleue. I thought Muslims didn't drink booze.
They don't. I'm a Sufi.
I felt I was being nosy. If Monsieur Ibrahim didn't want to tell me about his disease, that was his privilege. And I kept silent till we got back home. That evening, I opened my father's dictionary. Sufism, mystical tendency born within the Islam of the 8th century. It opposes legalism and stresses inner religion. Well, the one important thing was that Sufism wasn't a disease. And it transpires, from all of it, that Monsieur Ibrahim, with his aperitif, believed in God the Muslim way, but in a way that verged on illegality, opposed to legalism. That one gave me a hard time. If legalism was the strict, literal, or excessive conformity to the law, which is what the dictionary people said it was, on the whole, it meant Monsieur Ibrahim was a dishonest person. In other words, I associated with people I shouldn't associate with. But at the same time, if conforming to the law meant being a lawyer like my father, looking grey like he did, having about as much conversation as a toilet bowl, and spreading sadness at home, I'd rather be against legalism, along with Monsieur Ibrahim. When we were having dinner, I couldn't help asking my father, as he was quietly gobbling his dog food, which I said was lamb stew,
Dad, do you believe in God?
He looked at me, and then he said slowly,
I see you're becoming a man.
I didn't see what that had to do with the price of beans. I even wondered for a moment if someone had blown the whistle and told him that I went to the Rue du Paradis to see the girls. But then, he said...
No, I never managed to believe in God.
Never managed? Why, do you have to make an effort?
Do you believe that all of this has a meaning?
Yes.
Yes, you do have to make a tremendous effort.
But we're Jews. You and me, I mean.
Yes.
And being a Jew's nothing to do with God?
Not anymore. Being a Jew only means remembering things. And not even well.
He looked like he was in desperate need of a few aspirins. Maybe because he talked more than he usually did. A few days later, he came back home looking even more pale than usual. I started feeling guilty. I told myself that I'd ruined his health. What with the shit I gave him to eat and the piss I gave him to drink. He seemed to want to say something. But it took him at least 10 minutes before he got anything out.
I was fired, Mays. The firm I work for doesn't want me anymore. They don't think I'm capable as a lawyer anymore.
To be honest, it didn't surprise me much that people wouldn't want to work with my father. He must have depressed the hell out of criminals.
I'm going to have to find another job somewhere else. I don't know what.
Those concerns were beyond me.
We'll have to tighten our belts.
That was the last straw. I couldn't see how we could possibly have a shittier deal than we already did. He went to bed. He obviously didn't give a shit about how I felt about the whole thing. I went down to see Monsieur Ibrahim, who was smiling and munching on peanuts.
How can you be so happy, Monsieur Ibrahim?
I know what's in my Quran.
Maybe I should steal your Quran from you someday. But that's not done when you're a Jew.
Momo, what does it mean to you, being a Jew?
Nothing. Just being depressed all day long. That's all. Oh, and it means I can't be anything else.
Tomorrow we'll buy you some shoes. Your shoes are terrible, Momo. I notice you're limping.
Yes, but...
Momo, a man spends his life in only two places. His bed or his shoes.
I've got no money, Monsieur Ibrahim.
I'll pay for them. You only have one pair of feet. If your shoes hurt, throw them away. You can never change feet.
The following day, on my way back from school, I found a note on the floor. I don't know why, my heart started beating like crazy as soon as I saw my father's handwriting. Moise, I'm sorry, but I'm leaving. I don't have it in me to be a father. Popol, that was crossed out. He probably wanted to say something about Popol again. Like, with Popol, I could have made it. With you, I can't. Or, Popol gave me the strength and energy to be a father, you don't. Or some shitty thing he was ashamed of at the last minute. I got the message, thanks very much. Maybe we'll see each other again someday. When you're all grown up. When I don't feel quite so ashamed and... when you found it in you to forgive me. Goodbye. Goodbye, all right. P.S. What money I have left is on the table. Here's a list of people who should know I'm gone. They'll take care of you. And after that, there was a list of four names I'd never heard of. Making a decision didn't take me long. I had to pretend. Abandoned twice. Once by my mother when I was born, another time by my father when I was a teenager. If word got round, nobody would give me the time of day. My decision was irrevocable. I'd fake my father's presence. I went right down to the grocery store.
Monsieur Ibrahim, my father has stomach problems. What should I give him?
Alka-Seltzer, Momo. Here's a box.
Oh, thanks. I'm going back up to give it to him.
The money he'd left me lasted a month. I learned how to forge his signature to fill the necessary forms in, to answer letters from my school. A few nights a week, for the benefit of the neighbours across the street, I sat in his chair, with his sweater, his shoes, flour in my hair, and I tried to read a brand new shiny Quran Monsieur Ibrahim had given me after I'd begged him. At school, I told myself I had no time to lose. I had to fall in love. Considering it was a boys' school, there wasn't much of a choice. We were all in love with the super's daughter, Miriam. She was very stingy with her looks and her smiles. I started courting her. Wham, bam, smile! I had to prove to myself that someone could love me. I told Monsieur Ibrahim about my wooing Miriam. He listened to me with a slight smile of one who knows how the story ends, but I pretended not to notice.
And how's your father? I don't see him in the mornings anymore.
He works long hours. He has to leave really early.
Does he? Isn't he upset that you're reading the Quran?
Well, I hide it from him. Besides, I don't really get what it says.
Back where I come from, when people want to learn about something, they don't pick up a book. They speak with somebody. They hear it from somebody. I don't believe in books.
You got a point there. When you add up all the books that my father's read...
When a man hasn't discovered life from God, logic will not make it clear to him.
And yet, Monsieur Ibrahim, you keep saying that you know...
What's in my Quran is true. I feel like going to Normandy, to Kabul. Would you like to come along?
Really?
If your father has no objection, of course.
He won't.
Are you sure?
I'm telling you, he won't.
When we arrived in the lobby of Kabul's Grand Hotel, I couldn't help it. I started weeping. I wept for 2 hours. I couldn't catch my breath anymore. Monsieur Ibrahim looked at me weeping. He waited patiently for me to say something. I finally managed to get out a few words.
This is too beautiful, Monsieur Ibrahim. It's much too beautiful. It's not for me. I don't deserve it.
Monsieur Ibrahim shrugged and smiled. In the days that followed, we walked along the beach, and I told him about Miriam. After she'd admitted me among her suitors, she started rejecting me as an unworthy candidate.
It doesn't matter. Your love for her is yours. It belongs to you. Even if she won't have it, she can't change it. She doesn't want to enjoy it, that's all.
But you've got a wife.
Yes.
Why isn't she here with you? He pointed at the sea.
This really is an English sea, all grey and green. These are not normal colours for water. It almost looks like it picked up the accent.
He didn't answer my question, Monsieur Ibrahim.
No answer is an answer.
Every morning, Monsieur Ibrahim was the first one up. He would stand by the window, sniff the light, and do his calisthenics. One day in the bathroom, I was really amazed to find out Monsieur Ibrahim had been circumcised.
Monsieur Ibrahim, you too.
Muslims are just like Jews, Momo. It's Abraham's sacrifice. He reached out to God, offering him his child. The little bit of skin missing is the mark of Abraham.
Monsieur Ibrahim made me realize how Jews, Muslims, and even Christians had plenty of great men in common before they started beating each other up. Well, that was none of my business, of course, but it felt good. When we returned from Normandy, I walked back into the dark, empty apartment. I didn't feel any different. I just found the world could be different. I didn't have any money left. I started out by selling the books, few at a time, to the booksellers by the River Seine. Each time I sold a book, I felt more free. 3 months had passed since my father had gone. I still kept up appearances, and strangely enough, Monsieur Ibrahim questioned me less and less about him. True, I felt sad on certain nights. That was because I thought about Popo. I told myself that with my father gone, I wished I'd known Popo. I often went to bed thinking that somewhere in the world, there was a beautiful, perfect brother I didn't know, and that someday, I might get to meet him. One morning, the police came knocking on my door. They were shouting like they do in the movies.
Police, open up.
I thought, this is it, I'm in deep shit, I lied too much, they're here to arrest me. Once in the living room, the detective took me by the hand and said nicely,
I have some bad news for you, son. Your father's dead.
I couldn't say what surprised me most. My father being dead or the cop calling me son. Anyway, I collapsed into the reading chair.
He threw himself in front of a train in Marseille.
That was weird, too. Why do that in Marseille? There's trains everywhere. I'd never understand my father.
There's every reason to believe your father was desperate and voluntarily ended his life.
A father who commits suicide? That would do nothing for my state of mind. The policemen looked like they understood my silence. They glanced at the gloomy apartment around them, thinking, thank God, in a few minutes we'll be gone.
Is there anybody we should tell?
At last I had an adequate response. I got up and got the list of four names he'd left me. The detective pocketed it.
We'll let the social worker take care of that, eh?
Then he walked towards me and made a face like a sad, droopy-eyed puppy. I felt he was going to ask me for something weird.
Now, I've something difficult to ask you.
You're going to have to identify the body.
That was like a panic signal. I started howling like somebody had pushed a button. The policemen started hovering round me as though they were looking for a switch. No such luck. I was the switch and I couldn't stop. Monsieur Ibrahim behaved magnificently. He came up as soon as he heard my screams. He understood the situation immediately and said he would go to Marseille to identify the body. At first the policeman didn't seem to trust him because he really looked like an Arab, but I started screaming again, and then they okayed Monsieur Ibrahim's offer. After the funeral, I asked Monsieur Ibrahim, "How long ago did you understand, Monsieur Ibrahim?"
"Oh, since Kabul. But you shouldn't be mad at your father, Momo. You know?"
"I shouldn't. How am I supposed to do that? A father that tells me I stink, that walks out on me and then kills himself, that's sure to make me trust life in general.
Momo, Momo. Your father had no example to follow. He lost his parents when he was very young because they'd been carted away by the Nazis to die in concentration camp. Your father never got over escaping their fate. He resented being a survivor. It's no accident, Momo, that he died under the wheels of a train.
What's that got to do with it?"
"His parents had been taken to their deaths in a train. He'd always been looking for his train. If he didn't have the strength to live, Momo, it was not because of you. It was because of what was or never was before you came along."
Then, Monsieur Ibrahim stuffed some banknotes into my pocket.
"Here. Go to the Rue du Paradis. The girls are wondering how your book is coming along."
I started changing everything in the Rue Bleue apartment. One afternoon, I was opening all the windows to chase away the smell of paint when a woman walked in. I don't know why, but I instantly knew who she was. I pretended like I was focusing on what I was doing. After a while, she softly cleared her throat. I faked surprise.
"Are you looking for someone?"
"I'm looking for Moïse,"
my mother said. Strange how she had a hard time saying that name, as if it was catching in her throat. I wallowed in the exhilaration of screwing around with her.
"Who are you?"
"I'm his mother."
Poor woman. I felt sorry for her. She was in such a state.
"Who are you?"
"Me?"
I really felt like laughing. Working herself up like that, especially after 13 years, really.
"Everybody calls me Momo."
Her face collapsed. I laughed and added,
"It's short for Mohammed."
"What? You're not Moïse?"
"Oh, no. Don't get confused. I'm Mohammed.
But there's a boy here whose name is Moïse, isn't there?"
I felt like answering, "I don't know. You're his mother. You're the one who should know." But at the last minute, I caught myself because the poor woman didn't look like her legs were supporting her anymore. Instead, I offered her a nice, comfortable little lie.
"Moïse, it's gone. He was sick of being here. He doesn't have any happy memories."
"When's he coming back?"
"I don't know. When he left, he said he was going to see his brother."
"His brother?"
She seemed nonplussed. She caught a ladder for support.
"Yeah, Popo, his older brother."
"But Moïse was my only child. I never had a child named Popo."
When I heard that, I was the one feeling queasy. We stared at each other silently, our nostrils choked by the acrid smell of paint.
"Tell me, Momo."
"Mohammed."
"Tell me."
"Mohammed,
Is there a chance you might see Luis again?
Oh, maybe. I said that as though I couldn't care less. She could stare till the cows came home. She wouldn't squeeze a word out of me. I had confidence.
Well, if you ever see Luis again, tell him I was very young when I married his father. I only married him so I could leave home. I wasn't happy there. I never loved Moise's father. But I was ready to love Moise. Only I met another man. I studied to become a lawyer myself. Your father...
Pardon?
His father. Moise's father. Had me followed by a detective and a police inspector. They caught me in flagrante delicto with the other man. The man I live with today. Your father said, go away and leave Moise to me, otherwise I'll tell everyone how you behaved and put an end to your career as a lawyer. I left. I chose to build myself a new life. A life in which there has been... in which there is much happiness.
Oh. Sounds good.
Be sure to tell Moise. All right.
I might.
That same evening, I went to see Monsieur Ibrahim and asked him, jokingly,
so when are you going to adopt me?
He answered, jokingly,
how about tomorrow, if that's okay with you, my little Momo?
We had to fight. The official world, the world of stamps.
We already have a no in our pockets. Now let's go get a yes.
My mother, even if the word seems pompous for someone who'd only dedicated 9 months and one afternoon to me, my mother finally accepted Monsieur Ibrahim's proposition, to use the jargon of the social worker.
How about your wife, Monsieur Ibrahim? Is she okay with it?
My wife went back to our country a long time ago. I can do whatever I want. But if you wish, we'll go visit her next summer.
Then we received the papers. From now on, I was the son of the man I had chosen. That day, Monsieur Ibrahim decided we should buy a car to celebrate.
Next summer, we'll go to the Golden Crescent together. I'll show you the sea, the one and only sea, the sea from which I come.
Could we go there on a flying carpet instead?
Carpets fly too low these days. Why don't you grab this catalogue, eh? And choose a car instead.
Oh, sure, Dad.
It's crazy how, with the exact same word, Dad, you can have such different feelings. We went to the car dealership.
I want to buy this one. It was picked by my son.
Monsieur Ibrahim was worse than I was. He ended each sentence with my son, as though he'd just invented fatherhood. And when people seemed surprised by how little we looked like each other, he laid it on even thicker by giving me a knowing wink. The salesman started explaining the car's features in detail.
You don't have to start giving me a song and dance about it. I'm telling you, I want to buy it.
Do you have a driver's license?
Of course.
And Monsieur Ibrahim took out his leather wallet and pulled out a document that looked like it dated all the way back to the pyramids.
That's a driver's license?
Can't you tell?
It seemed to me like Monsieur Ibrahim was keeping his sarcasm in check. The salesman decided he would believe this sedate old man.
But you have the option of paying in several monthly installments. For instance...
Monsieur Ibrahim got all red in the face.
When I say I want to buy a car, it means I can. I want to pay cash.
So, you can write us a check, can you?
That's enough now.
I've hardly ever seen him lose his temper.
I'm telling you I want to pay cash.
And he put down wads of banknotes on the table.
But nobody ever pays cash.
Well, are you going to tell me this is not money? There are no large denominations. I took it in my cash register. Why can't you? What kind of establishment is this, Momo?
All right, well, let's move on then. We'll deliver the car to you in 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
That's impossible. I'll be dead in 2 weeks.
2 days later, they delivered the car outside the grocery store. As soon as he climbed inside, Monsieur Ibrahim started delicately touching all the controls with his long, slender fingers. Then, he wiped his forehead and his face turned green.
I've forgotten, Momo.
You did learn, didn't you?
Oh, yes, a long time ago. My friend Abdullah taught me, but...
Yes?
But cars were different then.
Monsieur Ibrahim, by any chance, were the cars you learned how to drive in pulled by horses?
By donkeys, my little Momo. By donkeys.
Well, what about your driver's license the other day?
An old letter from my friend Abdullah, explaining how his grape picking went.
What about your Quran? Can't you find something in there to give us a solution, as you always do?
Of course not, Momo. They travel on camel's backs in the Quran. So you can just forget about driving tips. And the Quran is not a how-to book for Boy Scouts. Momo, it serves a purpose for things spiritual, not things mechanical.
Monsieur Ibrahim finally decided we'd take driving lessons together. As I wasn't old enough, he was the one who would officially learn, while I was sitting in the back. As soon as the lesson ended, we'd take our car, and I'd sit behind the wheel. We'd drive through Paris at night to avoid the traffic. My driving got better and better. Finally, summer came, and we set off. We travelled across all of Europe by way of the south. We went to the Middle East, with our windows open. It was amazing to discover how the universe got interesting as soon as you travelled with Monsieur Ibrahim. As I could only look at the road, he spent hours describing the landscapes, the sky, the clouds, the villages, the inhabitants. In fact, I believe that during that trip I didn't see any of Europe. No, I heard it. From Istanbul onwards, Monsieur Ibrahim talked less. He was moved. We were nearing his land.
Soon we're going to meet the sea I come from.
Every evening he'd watch the sun set.
I'm happy,
he'd say.
You're here and I know what's in my Quran.
Where's that sea you come from, Monsieur Ibrahim? Will you show me on the map?
Don't bother me with your maps, Momo. This isn't school.
He asked me to stop in a mountain village.
No, I want to take you dancing.
Dancing? Monsieur Ibrahim?
Absolutely, yes. That's necessary. Man's heart is a bird locked up in a cage. If you dance, the bird's song may reach God. Let's go to the teke.
He took me to a teke. And that was the first time I saw the men whirling. The dervishes were wearing great robes of pale, heavy, flowing material. A drum rolled, and the dervishes, who were as long as ninepins, instantly changed themselves into tops. They were whirling and whirling and whirling again and again.
You see, Momo, they're praying.
You call that praying?
Of course, Momo. They lose all earthly references. That heaviness we call balance. They become torches that consume themselves in a great fire.
They were whirling and whirling and whirling again and again.
Quiet, Momo. Huh? Follow me.
And Monsieur Ibrahim and I started whirling. I found out that praying was damn nice after all. Because the further you got from this world, the better you focused on precise thoughts. I don't know what Monsieur Ibrahim was thinking, but during the first few dances, I was telling myself, I'm happy being with Monsieur Ibrahim. Then, I'm no longer mad at my father for leaving.
Then,
after all, my mother didn't have much of a choice when she... But that's where I stopped. Because Monsieur Ibrahim had just collapsed on the floor. He'd passed out. We made him lie down and gave him something to drink. When he came to, he winked at me.
So, Momo, did you think beautiful things?
Yeah, that was incredible. I wasn't so mad at my father anymore.
Very good, Mama. Your father was a fool, but even fools have excuses.
I think that if I hadn't stopped, I might have dealt with my mother.
You see, Momo, going to the Teke is a necessary thing. You get rid of bad thoughts. Better, you cleanse yourself.
Every day we'd stop in a Teke. Sometimes Monsieur Ibrahim wouldn't whirl. He'd only sip some tea and half close his eyes. I'd whirl like crazy. No, in fact, I'd whirl to become less and less crazy.
So, Monsieur Ibrahim, when are we going to find the sea where you were born?
We're getting there, Momo. We're getting there.
But I felt good because Monsieur Ibrahim was losing his fear. He'd probably dreaded that I'd be disappointed by his birth sea. I was sure I was going to like it, and I kept telling him that. Then came the day that never should have happened. Monsieur Ibrahim told me that it was just a matter of hours before we'd get to his birth sea. He asked me to wait for him under an olive tree. The idea didn't sound half bad. I fell asleep. When I woke up, night had fallen. I waited for Monsieur Ibrahim until midnight. When midnight came, I walked to the next village. When I arrived on the square, people came rushing towards me. I didn't understand their language, but they were talking animatedly and seemed to know me very well. They took me to a big farm. There, several women were crouching down and moaning. Then they took me to Monsieur Ibrahim. He was lying on a trunk, all covered with wounds, bruises, and cuts. The car had smashed directly into a farm wall. He looked all flat and weak. I threw myself at him. He opened his eyes and smiled like he used to when he saw me.
Momo, this is where the journey ends.
No, it doesn't. We haven't reached your birth sea yet.
Oh, yes, I've reached it. All the branches of the river flow into the same sea. The one and only sea.
And right then and there, I started crying in spite of myself.
Mama, I'm not pleased.
I'm scared for you, Monsieur Ibrahim.
Well, I'm not scared. I know what's in my Quran.
He should never have said that. It brought back far too many happy memories. I started weeping even harder.
Momo, you're crying for yourself, not for me. I've had a good life. I've had everything. I've lived to a ripe old age. I've had a wife who died a long time ago, but who I still love very much. I've had my friend Abdullah, who I thought I'd get to see again. My little grocery store was doing well. The Ubla is pretty street, even though it's not blue. And then there was you.
To please him, I choked back all my tears. I made an effort. And wham bam, smile. He was pleased. It was as though he hurt less. Wham bam, smile. He gently closed his eyes.
I'm not dying, Momo. I'm joining the boundless.
That's my story. I hitchhiked my way back. I placed myself into the hands of God, as Monsieur Ibrahim used to say when he talked about homeless people. I begged and slept outside. And that also was a beautiful gift. When I got back to Paris, I found out Monsieur Ibrahim had thought of everything. He'd emancipated me, which meant I was free. And I inherited his money, his grocery store, and his Quran. I opened the grey envelope and delicately removed the old book. At last I was going to know what was in his Quran. In his Quran, there were two dried up flowers and a letter from his friend Abdullah. And now I'm Momo, the guy who manages the grocery store on the Rue Bleue that's not blue. To everybody, I'm the street's Arab. Arab means open at night and on Sundays in the grocery business.
Avec ma gueule de métèque, de juif errant, de pâtre grec, et mes cheveux au contrevent, je viendrai, ma douce captive, mon âme sœur, ma source vive, je viendrai boire tes 20 ans. Et je serai prince de sang rêveur, ou bien adolescent, comme il te plaira de choisir.
Monsieur Ibrahim et les Fleurs du Coran by Eric Emmanuel Schmidt was adapted for radio and performed by Henry Goodman. The translation was by Stéphane Laporte. Technical presentation was by Graham Harper, and the broadcast assistant was Lee Wilson. It was directed for BBC World Service by Marion Lancaro.